here. Just came in the room. All casual, like, closing argument. My name is Walter Atzen. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. Two ways to stream the program. We are here 9 to 11 weeknights. It's great having you with us on this Friday evening. Lovely weather out there tonight.
It's just it's gorgeous. It's hideous. It's just downright hideous.
That is Neil Lynch. I don't even have a title for him anymore.
I have no title.
Former chair of the Republican Liberty Caucus, which seems like, even though we're probably talking about a year or less.
It seems like it's a long time.
But it feels like a decade. It feels like it's been a really, really long time since those days. In studio with us this evening, 651-989-5855 is the number to join us for your live and local reaction to the news breaking this evening regarding a missile attack, a retaliation against Syria for their alleged chemical weapons attack on their own people. Brad Ullman taking those calls and producing the show. Now, we are dutifully going to give you the latest here on the missile attack in Syria, and we'll riff on it a little bit, and we'll take your calls at 651-989-5855. I can't imagine, though, you know, I'm going to start my analysis by saying, is there really a whole lot to talk about here?
Not really. We're just waiting for the war porn to come in to tell us all the fun stuff about what happened.
And that's exactly what it is. I mean, the fact of the matter right now is pretty much a short paragraph. They launched missiles. They hit their targets. They're not telling you a whole lot else.
Right.
But this is, we knew this was coming because Trump tweeted it out
right
a couple of days ago.
This is why they don't let him in national security briefings.
Right.
And by the way, I will have to go on the record as saying that I am extremely disappointed that my Facebook, my temporary Facebook profile picture did not stem the tide of this from happening.
What was your temporary Facebook profile picture?
It just said no war with Syria.
And
so
that wasn't effective?
It didn't move the needle one bit. I feel like they just ignored it.
At least you can rest secure in the knowledge that you did the most you possibly could.
Absolutely.
To fend off war.
I did what I could.
Yes.
All gave some gave all.
you fully fulfilled your obligation as an activist, as an interested citizen.
I'm done. I don't have nothing more to do.
Profile pic changed. And we're done.
Moving on to the next thing.
And we're done. From the Star Tribune, the United States, France, and Britain together launched military strikes in Syria to punish President Bashar Assad for a suspected chemical attack against civilians and to deter him from doing it again. Which is interesting, seeing as how he did this last year and we also launched missiles against him. Clearly didn't deter him from doing it again.
No.
I mean, that's kind of like the number one thing that I noticed out of this, is that if this is your response and that's all you're prepared to do, you're not going to take it any further, you're not going to declare war, you're not going to neutralize his capacity to act in the future, then it's demonstrated that it's not going to deter him. Because here he did it again, right? So, you know, even before we get into the question of whether or not it's our job to retaliate against what's arguably an internal Syrian affair, even if your goal is to actually affect change in Syrian policy, demonstrably that hasn't happened. So how is just doing the same thing again 1 year later going to make a significant difference? And I understand, you know, one of the talking points that they had at the briefing, the Pentagon briefing that's ongoing as we speak, is that no, this is different this time, because this time France and Britain are with us, and last time we did it by ourselves. I'm not sure the missiles or anything they hit really care about that distinction.
Well, this seems, assuming of course, that this was all legitimate, that the intelligence was valid, that this was actually happening, right? So that there's an assumption you make, which a lot of people, and I have to confess myself, I'm kind of not necessarily in the camp that I think it was, that actually happened. I think it may have been set up, but then again, so brushing that aside for sake of argument, yeah, you're right. If this is going to be your response, yeah, you're not going to deter him. You either have to go do the whole thing or none at all.
Right.
I mean, this kind of gets back into the whole issue of Saddam Hussein, right? If your goal was to take care of him, then in 1991, we should have gone all the way in and taken care of him, but we stopped at the border, right?
Right.
To me, this whole thing smacks very much, and forgive me for being cynical, which seems to be my MO lately, but this very much smacks of a little wag the dog. He's having, you know, there's the whole issue of Trump and Facebook and the election, which is a whole different story altogether. And then there's Stormy Daniels and all the bad press at home. So it's just like the movie. Hey, I'm having some problems at home. Let's lob some cruise missiles at somebody. I think Bill Clinton did that too at one point.
Right.
So it's from a foreign policy perspective, that, yeah, you're right. This is if you know, putting on my warfare state warmonger hat. Yeah, this is really a lame response. But here's the thing: is that we are razor sharp, ridiculously close to kicking sand in Russia's face.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that this kind of thing could start World War III.
Well, I mean, Russia, in response to Trump's tweet in which he disclosed the operational security plans of the United States 2 days in advance. In response to that, the Russians said, we're going to shoot down anything that you fire. Now, obviously, they didn't do that. They also indicated that they might shoot the source of any missiles
right.
that were fired. They obviously didn't do that, which, you know, arguably the Russians are more restrained at this point than is the current administration.
That was exactly the thought that I had at one point. I was looking at some of the news stories leading up to this, even, you know, on the way here before this actually happened, I was looking at the news stories and yeah, I'm thinking to myself, we're the crazy ones here. Russia looks like they're measured and calm. Now, of course, that's the thing is that ultimately, you know, not the regular walk and file citizens, we can only speculate what's actually happening. We're being mm-hmm. told
yeah,
this
sure,
on the
absolutely.
Media.
Yeah.
We don't really know what's going on. That's the one area, by the way, where social media is great is because mm-hmm. despite the bad reputation that social media has received, and perhaps rightfully so, but for different reasons than what others think, the fact is that this gives the average citizen the ability to triangulate multiple stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can take the Twitter feeds and any of the social network posts, and you can kind of take that all together and collate those and get a picture of what's actually happening, assuming, of course, that these governments let this stuff through and then it's
right.
credible and it's not rumor mill. But again, you know, obviously people are going to spread false rumors in this type of environment. But the fact is, if you get enough reports and you get enough things coordinated and collated, you can kind of tell what's going on. So I'd be very curious to see what that feed looks like over time.
Let's talk to Zach in Llano Lakes, regular caller. Appreciate his input. What's on your mind, Zach?
God help us all. I think several parts of the Bible, I think, apply to this issue right now. There are several verses in the context of Proverbs chapter 26 that I think apply, the most pertinent one being, like a person passing by and meddles in a quarrel that's not his is one who grabs a dog by the ears. You see, what has foreign policy been for maybe more than a century now? Even World War One and even the Spanish-American War. How long has it been since we've actually gotten involved in a war that has been justified, biblically speaking? I mean, this. I mean, the Bible speaks of how you know, the person who digs a pit will fall into it later in this chapter.
Right. Yeah.
Whoever rolls a stone, it will come back on him. And that brings me to the other passage, which I think applies. The entire book of Lamentations talks about how how much ruin and sadness and destruction, you know, a warfare state, military industrial complex can cause.
I'm going to have to go back and read Lamentations. I think it might rank right up there with Ecclesiastes as one of my favorite books in terms of just the blunt realism.
We gotta repent of this statism. We have to repent now, and we have to stop believing these people. I mean, they lied about things, you know, when they could have taken action, it wasn't convenient for them. I mean, FDR could have plotted to assassinate Hitler, and there were people who wanted him to help with that, but he refused at the time. But later on, when it was convenient to get him involved in war, nah. I mean, then that's when he swooped in and stuff. From what I read.
Appreciate.
There's just so much lies everywhere, and if we repeat our folly, like going back to chapter 26 of Proverbs, it says, "Like a person returning to their vomit is a fool who repeats their foolishness."
Appreciate your thoughts as always, Zach. Thanks for calling.
Well, Zach, clearly, Zach, you have not been to church lately. Don't you understand that the United States was raised up by God to protect Israel, and we have been raised up as the shining light. It is our job to help fulfill prophecy. Don't you, and I'm being incredibly sarcastic right now, but don't you get it? And that's funny too, because there's been a lot of people who are looking at this. Obviously, you look, and now, believe me, I grew up as a fundamental Baptist, so I am incredibly well-versed on eschatology and on the end times. And I can tell you that this kind of stuff gets,
eschatological porn.
Oh, it totally is. Every time I see this, I'm like, oh God, here it is. Is it the end times? Is this when the Antichrist comes in?
Right.
Like all the stuff that Christian fundamentalists were taught, right? But, you know, oh, Zach, how dare you question the moral authority of the United States of America. You clearly don't have your Bible wrapped in an American flag with a Constitution inside. When I heard him talk, I'm like, I remember how I grew up, and I remember exactly what I was taught in those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And we have been ordained, and of course, there's a lot of people getting all worked up right now, I'm sure, but we were ordained by God. Don't bother looking for a verse or any kind of passage of scripture to justify that. Right. We were ordained by God to protect Israel.
Yeah.
And to keep all these things from happening, which is funny because as far as I can tell, Israel's pretty good at taking care of themselves if we let them.
Well, I mean, there's a number of problems with that, and we could get into the weeds with it, but suffice it to say that, you know, if you think that God's plan and God's will is dependent upon the executive decisions of Donald Trump or how you pull a lever in a ballot box or what you vote for, then I would say you have a pretty small view of the deity.
I was taught in 1984 that Christians needed to vote for Ronald Reagan to bring revival back to America.
Well, that worked out.
Well, clearly it did.
651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Neil Lynch in studio with us tonight. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. The United States launches its retaliatory attack. And, you know, even describing it that way isn't particularly accurate, because a retaliatory attack implies something was done to you. Nothing was done to us here.
Show me on the map where Syria hurt you.
Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Neil Lynch in studio with us tonight. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, 651-989-5855. Let's talk to Mike in Woodbury. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Walter.
Anytime.
Right, yep. This really angers me. I'm so tired of this. I imagine many other Americans are war weary, and just how frivolous they treat life. These people don't deserve to run the country anymore.
Wow.
This has gone on for far too long. We've looked at all this stagecraft, even with Obama. If you go back, if you remember, one of the reasons that bin Laden was so upset is that Westerners were on what he considered to be sacred ground. And that was our Gulf War. And that brought us the attacks on the Trade Center. And, you know, we don't even take care of our priorities here. We can't even keep our own citizens safe. We don't even protect our own borders. But, yes, we're going off on another misadventure here. And I can't imagine being a serviceman and, you know, asking yourself, you know, what the hell are we doing?
Mm.
This is not a direct attack on America. And how have we benefited?
It's not even an indirect attack on America.
You go back to what Eisenhower said about the military-industrial complex. I think John McCain's all in on this.
Oh, of course.
I mean, he can't get enough of this. And a lot of people are going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But as an American, you got to ask yourself, how does this benefit us?
Right.
And really, America has really become obscene. We used to be a country where we're independent. We want to be left alone. We want to pursue our own liberty.
Mm-hmm.
But now we want to get involved. And like with the Bush era,
mm-hmm.
we're going to franchise the brand of America around the globe because we've got it right, folks.
Yeah.
This is absolutely disgusting.
I appreciate your enthusiasm and your calls always, Mike. I got to say, I'm surprised. I wasn't expecting that from Mike. You know, Mike's one of our regular callers. He's a big Trump supporter. And we were speculating because we saw his name pop up on the screening board as to what his take was going to be. And I was wrong. I assumed he was going to be, this is great, and, you know, fill in reasons. But he sounds like you, Neil.
So, there's something he said that I think is the one thing that nobody wishes to acknowledge. He'd mentioned that bin Laden was upset, and what fueled his whatever he did was partially because when the U.S. invaded Iraq, they were on, or when they were in Saudi Arabia, they were on holy ground.
Right.
That there's a term for that. It's called blowback.
Mm.
And anybody who followed Ron Paul or anybody who is skeptical of our foreign policy understands what blowback is.
Mm-hmm.
And I continue to bristle every time well-meaning, but I think, my opinion, misinformed people say, well, they are going after America because they hate us. No, it's because you went in their country, invaded, and probably killed some of their friends. Like, this is blowback. This is the epitome of blowback. And we continue to repeat the cycle. Now, we don't remember how this all started. Now we're just fighting because they go after us, we go after them, they go after us, we go after them. And it's this never-ending cycle.
It's not even blowback. It's like metastasizing of a cancer. Like, we started with the Taliban, then we went to Al-Qaeda, and now we're dealing with ISIS.
Mm.
And it's just worse every time.
I'm actually kind of curious to see what they're going to make next, they being the CIA and everybody else that invented that.
All right, let's keep it within the bounds. But no, I mean, look, you definitely have a point. And I have to say, you know, over in the time that we've known each other, Neil, my stance on foreign policy has gone through a bit of a metamorphosis. I've never been particularly comfortable with Ron Paul's rhetoric on foreign policy and foreign wars, because it always seemed to me as though he was proceeding from a kind of naivete regarding the fact that different cultures have different values. And you know, like he would assume when you make a statement along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing here, that other people, when you try to put other people in your shoes and say, well, how would you feel if some other country came into your, you know, backyard and started doing all the things that we've done over there? That assumes that they're looking at it through the same prism that we are, that they have the same cultural priorities and same values that we do, which is not necessarily true. And also, it seems to, the way Ron Paul articulated things seem to preclude the possibility that there ever actually would be a legitimate threat against the country, and that we might actually have to go to a real war and win it. And so my view has always been that once you identify a state threat to the country and you decide that you're going to declare war through a constitutional process, your objective ought to be to end that conflict decisively and quickly, which is more in line with like what Rand Paul has talked about.
Right.
I'll tell you what, though, in the past few months, my views have drifted closer and closer to yours and to Ron Paul's informed primarily by one thing, and that's the, this idea of moral leadership in the world. It's funny because this is one of the things that always comes up, and it's kind of like the go-to argument from the quote-unquote neocons, is that, well, the United States, and it kind of goes hand-in-hand with what you were saying in the last segment regarding the notion from certain evangelicals that were ordained by God to go forth and bomb people, apparently. I don't know where that was in the Bible. But it's this similar sense of America is tasked with the role of moral leadership, and we have to lead the way by bombing people and by bombing things and by sending missiles through the sky. I agree that we have a unique role as potential moral leaders, but I dispute the idea that the only means to do that is through the initiation of force.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you're right too. And I've always felt that way. And a lot of people painted Ron Paul as being a complete non-interventionist. Now, I'm sure he, you know, and like you said, though, the way that Rand articulated it was something more to what I'm with, is that if we are going to have to do it, it should be a last resort. And if we're going to do it, we're going to be decisive about it and get out. Like, for example, using this in context, not looking at the historical aspect of how we got to that point, but if something similar to Afghanistan 9/11 ever happened again, the goal is you get in there, you kill them, or you neutralize them, get rid of them, and then you get out.
Right.
But of course, you know, and here comes the cynical part. We stuck around to protect the poppy fields, you know. So that's, I agree with you. And I, just like you said, my foreign policy has changed over the last couple of decades. And again, like, I started off as the, you know, God ordained America to rule the world with democracy and to enforce it wherever necessary. But that's, I mean, as I see the effects of blowback, you know, and it's funny because I lived amongst it for a long time growing up in Southern California. At the time I was out there, there were a lot of Iranians, Persians, whatever, you know, that they called themselves, but a lot of Iranians who migrated to Southern California as a result of the Shah being deposed. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that I spent a lot of time with a lot of great people who just happened to be from Iran.
Right.
And the ones that I met were all westernized. You use the air quotes. They just wanted to make money.
Right.
And a lot of them were Muslim. I had no idea. One of my favorite places I used to eat was a guy named Big Mo's Sub Shop, and his restaurant was painted green and gold. I thought he was a Packer fan. No, those are important colors in Islam. But I was never uncomfortable.
Right.
It was only years later that I was told I needed to be uncomfortable.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and that's my point, is that the actual moral leadership is in demonstrating the fruits of our values by saying, look, freedom and trade and relationship and respect and decency and benevolence, these are good things which produce good results, as evidenced by our cornucopia of prosperity that you too can take part in. That's convincing. Bombing my nephew is not.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? And you know, there's one side of this debate that completely dismisses the possibility that people would ever look beyond the threat of being bombed or shot to something more positive and productive and say, gee, maybe that's the direction our culture ought to go.
Exactly. Yeah. It's we lead, what's it? Lead by example.
Yeah,
absolutely. We need to be, you know, what, and of course there's always the statement, commerce with all, alliances with none, but we're going to be more convincing if we trade with people than if we blow them up.
651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Neil Lynch in studio with us on this Friday evening. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Yeah, I know it's live, national, international breaking news and all, but I still feel as though we've spent way too much time talking about
this
attack in Syria. I mean, you know, you get through that first short paragraph of we launched missiles and they hit their targets, and there's not really a whole lot new to analyze there.
Well, Russia has already said that there will be repercussions.
Yeah, well, that could be anything. That could be a sternly written letter channeled through the UN or whatever the case may be. I'll believe it when I see it on Russia's part.
I just don't want them to, like, embargo vodka. That would be bad.
Yeah, but there's so many other liquors to choose from.
Honestly. That's true. I got a point.
You know,
can I give up vodka for the cause? Absolutely. I think I can.
We've got good old American whiskey.
There you go.
America.
Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Neil Lynch in studio with us this evening. Libertarian extraordinaire. And that's the direction that I want to take our conversation now, is to talk about libertarianism, the Libertarian Party, this moment in political happenings, and how you're perceiving it from your, shall we say, self-excommunicated former Republican perspective. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us. Brad Ullman takes those calls and produces the show. But so we got this piece at Reason that I think is indicative of everything that's wrong with third parties generally and the Libertarian Party in particular. And it doesn't just apply to third parties and the Libertarian Party. It also applies, in my view, to units of the Republican Party in particularly blue districts. You see this same sort of stupidity take place. And once we share the story here, I'll get into my analysis of why I think that is. From Reason, Irvin Vora, vice chair of the Libertarian Party's National Committee, prides himself on being rhetorically uncompromising in staking out the most radical and potentially outrageous outer frontiers of libertarian thought. His past comments on the age of consent, which he says isn't the government's business, and the proper moral attitude toward members of the U.S. military, he says they're hired killers, caused the party's New York gubernatorial candidate, Larry Sharp, singled out by Politico as a rarity, a serious libertarian candidate, to quit his position on the National Committee after it failed to suspend Vora back in February. Since then, the rhetorical outrages have continued. In a post last month on the social network site MeWe, Vora, of course it was on MeWe. Of course, that's where he said this.
Of course.
Vora wrote, "Bad idea, school shootings. Good idea, school board shootings." Wow. Wow.
Oh, but wait. He has an explanation for it all.
Vora insists that was not a serious threat, but a joke in poor taste. I see, here's the thing about the joke argument. It better be funny, number one.
Right.
And it better be, like, obviously a joke. If you're going to joke about something like that, there is nothing in the way this is phrased that in any way makes it seem like a joke.
Right. Well, I mean, and it's just in such poor taste and such completely disconnected from society. Does he not have friends who are members of school boards? I mean, especially given, you know, and this was, you know, in direct correlation to the environment with the Parkland school shootings, is everybody is amped up emotionally about this for various reasons on various fronts. And you're going to wade in here with a joke.
Like, right.
even if this joke weren't as highly offensive as it is, it was just really bad timing.
Well, and from your position, like, take all of that out of it, like the value judgment of whether or not it was funny or not funny, whether or not it was appropriate or inappropriate on some sort of social level. As somebody who's in a position of professional, a professional politico, which, you know, when you're the vice chair of a national committee, there's a certain minimum degree of professionalism that you ought to be bringing to the table. It doesn't seem as though at any point he considered what is the effect of these words going to be upon everyone who I'm responsible to in this party.
Well, he doesn't have any, like, this is the third incident of recent note,
right?
You know, with his comments. And the thing is that what's troubling about this is that the other members of the Libertarian National Committee, many of them are acting just like a Republican or a Democrat would if one of their own, air quotes, said something like that.
They're circling the wagons.
Yep. They're rallying the troops. They're trying to discredit whatever it was. Mm-hmm. They're lashing out. They're doing exactly what the other two major parties do.
So the point that I want to make about this is that we've seen, and in fact, you know, we had in this very studio, we had Jim Carson from, I want to say, I believe it's the 4th Congressional
District. Yes, City 4.
and Abdi Muhammad, who is a Muslim Trump supporter. We had them in here some weeks back to respond to a series of Facebook posts by the current chair of the Republican Party in the 4th Congressional District and a couple of legislators as well who got in on the fun. That was some highly offensive comments regarding Muslims. And it doesn't surprise me that something like that comes out of the 4th Congressional District, because guess who's never going to win in the 4th Congressional District?
Right.
Republicans.
Yep.
This is indicative, and this is the through line between whether you're talking about the Libertarian Party or a generic third party or a mainstream party that is operating in a district where they don't have a chance of actually winning. When you don't have when you're not competitive and you don't have a chance of winning, why would anybody who actually has value to bring to the table want to be in leadership of that party unit? Now, this is something you can speak to firsthand, because you indeed did try to become the chair of the Libertarian Party here in Minnesota.
That's correct.
And you are the exception to what I'm saying here. You actually had a professional vision of, and we're talking to Neil Lynch here, of what you wanted to do with the party, with the goal of getting people elected. Like, imagine that, a political party that's actually trying to run candidates and get them elected in the real world.
That's a pretty far-fetched idea.
And that was rejected almost on that basis. Like, what are you talking about, get people elected? That's not why we're here. We're here to do this kind of silly nonsense. We're here to make waves and to draw attention to ourselves and to basically just be silly.
Or we're here to send personalized bongs to Jeff Sessions over his marijuana stance or whatever his ruling was.
Which accomplished what? You know what it accomplished? It accomplished lulls while you yourself are smoking up, you know, on the internet, right? Like, that's what it is. That's what it achieved. It didn't achieve anything whatsoever in terms of mobilizing any sort of political will or drawing positive attention to your organization.
Yeah, I think that's a good, you bring up a good point, because I think that's I don't know if it's what you call it, not the dilemma, but it's the feeling that you have when you're so far behind, right? Yeah. When you're that third party that doesn't have a chance and no one's going to listen to anyway. So then you it gives you the license and the liberty, so to speak, no pun intended, to make these outlandish decisions, right, because you think this is my Hail Mary. Yeah. This is what's going to move the ball up the field. I'm going to win on a miracle play instead of just trying to move the ball up the field a little bit at a time.
It's the other side of the coin of somebody like a Michelle Bachmann or a Dianne Feinstein or, you know, somebody, or a Nancy Pelosi, somebody who's in a district that's so safe that they can say things that are outlandish and crazy and that you don't have to worry about any sort of political blowback because you've got it so locked down. Whether you're locked out because your district is tilted so far one way or you're locked down because your district is tilted so far your way, in either circumstance, it does not promote particularly constructive or professional dialogue.
Yeah, and I'm still, I mean, this is his third strike, so to speak, on this. Yeah. And I'm really shocked. I mean, it should have. This is how bad, and this sounds like I'm picking on the Libertarian Party, but I'm just looking at what's happening and making a statement as far as how I feel, how bad things have become amongst libertarians. I mean, the stuff that happened in the, you know, when I ran for chair last year, notwithstanding, the fact is, perhaps the most capable, most serious libertarian candidate that the party has potentially ever had, or at least had since Harry Brown, right?
This guy, Larry Sharp.
Yeah, Larry Sharp. I mean, this guy, he's actually, I haven't had the privilege of meeting him yet. I've heard him speak. I've been on conference calls where he's been on, and I've seen his stuff online. He's fantastic, and he has, in most ways, the absolute right approach for how to handle things. It's positive, it's affirming, it's engaging people in conversation, it's promoting the values of libertarianism,
right,
while at the same time running for a political office.
Right.
This guy resigned in protest from the board, and it didn't register with anybody.
Yeah, yeah,
nobody
yeah,
was like, right, yeah, gee, if Larry Sharp doesn't want to be a part of this. I mean, again, there's always the balance of hero worship, and I get all that. But the fact of the matter is, Larry Sharp is a reasonable person. For him to take this step Somebody should have been like, you know what? Well, if Larry doesn't want to be a part of this, maybe I shouldn't be. But no, we got to circle the wagons and protect the brand. And in that way, they're no different than the other parties.
I have a entertaining analogy for this situation that I'll share with you when we return. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Neil Lynch in studio with us this evening. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Neil Lynch in studio with me tonight. Always great having him with us. You know, every fourth or fifth Friday we have you in, and it's always a good time. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us. We were talking last segment about the current state of the Libertarian Party. The vice chair of the Libertarian National Committee said some really ridiculous things, implying that there ought to be a shooting at a school board meeting, and then tried to walk it back and claim it was a joke and what have you. And we've been talking with Neil, who sought the chairmanship of the Libertarian Party here in Minnesota last year, about why it is that organizations like the Libertarian Party can't seem to get off the ground. There's like a failure to launch that takes place with these types of organizations. And I actually have a story that I wanted to tell you anyway about my kid that I think is instructive as to what's going on here and how this works. So there's this new game that just came out a couple of weeks ago for Xbox and the PC. It's called Sea of Thieves, and it's a pirate game. It's like this open world pirate game.
My son probably knows about it already, but go on. Yeah,
it's apparently really successful. And it's really interesting because, you know, what you do is you get together with a crew of either your friends or randoms, and you crew a ship, and you actually have to like trim the sails and check the map, and somebody has to steer the helm, and you're sailing around to these different islands, and you might get attacked by a kraken, or you might be chased by sharks, and you get in these islands and you have to dig up treasure and what have you. And it's pretty fun. And it's a cross-platform game, which means that if you have it for the Xbox, you also have it for the PC. And so this presented an opportunity in my house that I've never had before, which is on two different devices to have two of us in the house playing the same game in the same server, which I was pretty excited about because I'm a big nerd. And so my 9-year-old, my oldest, I got him all hooked up, and we're going to play this game together, right? And I got to tell you, I am convinced that the experience I had playing Sea of Thieves with my son, my eldest son, is an accurate experience, an accurate reflection of what it would be like to actually engage in piracy with my 9-year-old. And by that I mean, you know, we're going along and we're like being chased by another ship that's trying to sink us, and he drops the anchor. Because he sees an island he wants to explore. You know, we're running around and I'm trying to man the cannon to try to defend us, and I'm yelling at him to steer, and he's down in the guts of the ship, you know, checking out his uniform and changing his, you know, different things. He's not listening to anything that I'm trying to say. He's not being a good team player at all. He's the kind of person who, if he wasn't my own kid, I would block him on Xbox Live and I would never play with him again, right? And there, this is illustrative of, or a metaphor for, what is actually happening. You know, you brought up this guy, I forget his name, I already dropped the article, but the guy who was running for governor in New York.
Larry Sharp,
under the Libertarian Party flag, how he resigned from the National Committee as a result of the behavior of the other people that were around him. It's because it's analogous to my situation playing a video game with my 9-year-old.
That's perfect.
In that I'm over here assuming that, making the incorrect assumption that there's any sort of common value or common motive whatsoever. And even common understanding of like the basics of how things function. The answer is no. Like, we're on two completely different levels. I'm operating over here, you know, playing by the rules and actually trying to accomplish the objectives that the game was designed to achieve. And he's running around, you know, looking at plants, trying on different boots, and shooting off the cannon for no reason, letting people know where we're at. You know, like it's not. I mean, it was entertaining, right? And I'll keep playing with him because he's my kid. But it strikes me as very analogous of what's happening with the Libertarian Party. What happens with units of the Republican Party in districts that are tilted heavily blue, and therefore, because there's no way to win the game, they throw the rule book out and they just do and say whatever they want. Which makes the rest of the Republicans everywhere look bad, like what happened in CD4 that we talked about last
year. Yeah, it's having a year almost to reflect on it, which, by the way, the Libertarian Party State Convention for Minnesota takes place tomorrow, April 14th, at the same place it's been at for many, many years. I think it's at the Cambria Suites in Maple Grove. I'd have to look it up, but look it up online, lpmn.org, if you want to see that. But I will not be there. I have withdrawn from politics completely, almost about 99%. I happen to have neighbors and friends who are very active politicos. I'm also a member of my city's planning commission, so I have not completely gone out of politics per se, but I've certainly gone out of partisan politics. And what you described there is actually a really good. I agree. It's a really good analogy because it's not so much. In some cases, it's not just the fact that other people are doing other things or are distracted by bright, shiny objects. It's that they think that the nonsense that they're doing is the most important thing, and that when you try to tell them otherwise, they attack you. I lost the election for the Libertarian Party chair is because somebody decided to troll me.
Right.
Literally got trolled and I lost, I think it was like 7 votes.
Right.
But the trolling and the lulls was way more important than actually having an effective political party. So, know what? Good for you guys.
Right.
Peace out.
Yeah. My block list is full of those people. People who, for some reason, value the lulls of trolling above any sort of productive activity, you know, even something down to just have a conversation between two people.
Exactly.
It's pretty ridiculous. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Neil Lynch in studio with us. We'll be back momentarily. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. But who will build the roads? Who will build the roads, Neil? If not government.
I thought Obama was supposed to do that. Oh, he's not around anymore? Oh, God. I had so much fun talking about that kind of stuff.
Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and your iHeartRadio app. Two ways to stream the program. We are here 9 to 11 weeknights. Appreciate you tuning in. 651-989-5855 is the number to join us. You're free to do so this Friday evening. We typically keep a pretty loose grip on the reins of the show on a Friday night, and this Friday is no exception, particularly in the second hour of the program here at 10 o'clock.
Well, I will say this. I'm actually impressed. So a little behind the scenes for those of you who don't know how this radio thing works. So when we went to break... Walter has done this once or twice, so he knows, okay, you have to have a bio break, so you hit the restroom, but before you do that, you go to the coffee maker, and in my case, I'm on Whole 30 now, so I'm drinking tea a lot. So get the tea going, start it brewing, run to the restroom, do your business, come back, get the tea, come in, sit down, go on the air. Like, it was orchestrated beautifully. I felt like we've done this hundreds of times.
Yeah, I've got the feel of it down. I don't even need a clock. Like, biologically, I just know when I need to be back. That's how things work here. All right, so there's a story here that you tend to show up. I don't know, maybe it's just the stories I pick generally, like if you dropped in on any given night, this would work. But particularly when you show up, I know I'm going to get a different angle on a story than I typically would if I had a different guest. So this is a seemingly innocuous story, but I think it goes to, you know, I started off talking about who's going to build the roads. It kind of goes to that idea. From the Star Tribune, since 2015, Patricia Fox has had a reserved parking space in front of her home in Minneapolis because of her multiple sclerosis. But this year, her parking space will be moved to make way for a bike lane. This is the ultimate insult of someone who has trouble with mobility being vacated from a spot that helps them function in society by making way for able-bodied bikers, Fox said. Fox lives on a stretch of Fremont Avenue North that lies in the path of the pedestrian and bicycle improvement project. The project will revamp Fremont between Plymouth Avenue and 44th Avenue North, along with a stretch of Emerson Avenue between Plymouth and 33rd Avenue North, and then goes on to give more details. This story struck me as kind of a collision of sacred cows, because, you know, here certainly the motivation behind the bike project here, whatever it was that they were calling it, the pedestrian bike project that they're taking forth, the people who are promoting this in government undoubtedly think of themselves, you know, have their noses a little bit higher in the air by virtue of the fact that they're working so hard to greenify the community and to get people out of their cars.
Is greenify a word even?
Oh, I'm sure it is.
We're going to make that one tonight, yes.
It is now.
I'm going to go to Urban Dictionary while you're talking and add that, so.
But, you know, here it comes. They didn't count on the intersectional minority status, right? Like, they didn't count on being out-progressived by somebody whose circumstances they didn't predict, which kind of goes to the point that government's really bad at predicting things. It's really good at, or really bad at predicting how its dictated actions will affect people who it did not consider before they made their decision.
Yes, government in general is the leader, the sports leader in unintended consequences.
Right.
So every time people demand the government do something, or every time the government does something, there's always going to be, I mean, Austrian economics states, there's always going to be some kind of negative impact. The market, the free flow of exchange of ideas,
right,
is always going to be distorted in some way, shape, or form. And this, and yeah, it's a perfect example of when progressive ideologies collide. You know, the whole bike lane thing is, I'm not sure if you could call it more of a marketing type activity. We're just competing with Portland, right? Because we want to be better than Portland at bike lanes. You know,
here's what bike lanes are. Bike lanes are the communal equivalent of buying a treadmill that you're never going to use. That's what it is. It's oh, I'm going to spend this money as an expression of my intent to be more fit.
Yeah,
but you're never actually going to get on the thing. Maybe once or twice when you first bring it home, but that's going to be it.
Right. Well, it's this idealistic, unrealistic way. I guess government forcing people to adopt certain behaviors,
right.
You know, and this is the subtle nuance that a lot of people forget, and they always get bogged down in party ideology, right? And of course, when you take the left-right paradigm, which you know I love talking about,
right?
You know, they always say Republicans want to control your wallet, Democrats want to control your bedroom. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a case where, you know, and here's, you know, they always get on Republicans and say, well, you guys want to legislate morality. Well, Isn't forcing bike lanes in a way legislating morality? You're trying to force your opinion, your right. view of what's appropriate from a right. transportation perspective right. on other people. And again, yeah, I guarantee you that when the lofty bike lane people thought of their great ideas, that not a one of them are like, you know what? We have this program in Minneapolis where we let people with disabilities park in front of their house. Now we're going to completely destroy that.
Right.
I love the quote at the end of this article. It's from Nathan Coaster, who is apparently on the Minneapolis Transportation, the Minneapolis Transportation Planning Manager. And he said, there were some trade-offs, but there's a lot of improvements to really foster a better environment for people.
Yeah, and that speaks to kind of my ultimate observation of this, which is that government creates conflict where conflict would not otherwise exist. In a free market where the only way you were able to pursue and keep values was by productivity and trade, this type of a conflict would never manifest. You know, because there's nobody in this scenario, either her or the people who are promoting the bike lane, who are actually advocating for freedom, right? Like, what they're advocating for is, my interest is greater than your interest, therefore I'm the one who should be able to hold the club and bonk you over the head with it and take your money to use it for my stuff, right? Like, there's nobody who's advocating for, hey, maybe we just shouldn't, have things mandated in this way. Maybe we should privatize things.
And here's the other thing, too, is that I think that a lot of times when we're having this discussion about free markets versus government, right, which is sometimes what it comes down to, there's always this delusion that one side or the other have the perfect solution. And the fact of the matter is, free markets does not automatically mean it's going to be the perfect solution.
But it does mean that whatever the solution manifests will be mutually agreed upon.
Right. That's the thing, is that it's a voluntary arrangement versus an involuntary arrangement.
Right.
And so from that aspect alone, it's vastly superior to being told what to do.
Right. Yeah, going back to your evoking of the legislation of morality, you know, any time you initiate force in order to affect somebody else's choices, you are legislating morality. And that means that every piece of legislation is a legislation of morality.
That's the one thing that the Libertarian Party, you know, we've been bashing on them a little bit, but to their credit, a phrase that I've heard adopted in libertarian circles that I have adopted myself, and I think it's appropriate, is, in general, good ideas don't require force.
That's right.
So, and this is a great example. If it's a good idea, so you start from that premise. If it's a good idea, then why do we have to pass a law to make people do it?
Right.
And you can apply that. I mean, fill in the blank with anything, right? If healthcare was a good idea, why do you have to pass a law to make people get insurance? You know, whatever the situation is, whatever the issue is, I think that's a great rule of thumb to live by. And this is, yeah, I didn't know about the story, but it's just another example. I mean, there's all kinds of examples, and obviously you and I sit on the various boards and committees of our cities. You're the city council in Albertville, and I'm planning commission in Osseo, and it's amazing the types of things that we see and the types of issues that come up because government thinks that it knows better. But government also sometimes has a really short memory because they don't remember they did this for somebody, but now they're going to do it for somebody else, and now they have this conflict.
Right. Oh, yeah, that kind of stuff comes up all the time. And as you well know, you know, our ability to address specifics publicly is limited by the open meetings law.
That's correct.
But suffice it to say that scenarios such as you describe emerge all the time where the interests that are brought to bear, you know, the question that ultimately gets asked is what's best for the community, quote unquote. Well, that's going to depend entirely upon who you ask. In this situation here with the gal who's got the disabled parking space in front of her house, is her having that spot best for the community, or is having a bike path go through there best for the community?
Yeah.
The premise of the question is that the community owns that. The community gets to decide. Like, her interests aren't actually part of the equation. Because she doesn't own it. And so she doesn't ultimately get to have a say. Her task is to convince people, you know, basically through guilting them, that they ought to maintain her space. She isn't making a claim of ownership of, this is mine. You know, which if it was private, she would be able to. If it was private, this conflict would not exist because she could merely say, this is mine. I don't want a bike path there. End of story. You don't get to trespass. You don't get to steal. Right. And that's the beauty of the market that for some reason just seems to be lost on far too many people, even though many of those who consider themselves to be conservative.
Yeah. And even being open to considering, you know, makeshift hybrid compromise solutions in these types of things is what amazes me. You know, I've heard stories, and there's a famous TED talk, I forget, but there's a TED talk about how, and I guess, I think it's somewhere in the Western United States, but there is a river that was dry and it was pollution, and there were issues with different groups trying to take ownership of it. Well, they basically, and I wish I remember the details, but they basically went to an open free market for that riverway, where people could buy ownership shares and parts of it. You know what? Today, the river is flowing freely. There's tons of water in it because government, you know,
I'd be really interested in knowing how, like, the specifics of what they did and how that worked.
I will look that up, and we'll probably talk about it on the next segment.
Yeah, because, I mean, it makes sense that would be the case, because what happens in any sort of market situation is that when parties come into contact with one another, the only way for them to resolve any conflict is through mutual benefit. You know, if you have a conflict, the only way past it is to get the other person, the other side, to agree with your proposed resolution. We call that compromise. It's interesting because, you know, the word compromise is tossed about in the political discourse quite frequently as, you know, something that's necessary. Well, we need to be willing to compromise. But true compromise cannot take place at the point of a gun. True compromise cannot take place in the context of force, because that's not compromise, that's capitulation.
Yes.
When somebody's holding a gun to your head and saying, you're going to do it my way, and you say, well, okay, I guess so, because I don't want to get shot, that's not you compromising, because, you know, it's the best you can do. It's you capitulating to the fact that you're going to get hurt if you do it otherwise.
So it's very much like Russia's elections. It's amazing. Yes. Putin, you know, he won unanimously. Who's gonna argue with him, right? Yeah, I think that's pretty much the epitome of that. The I forgot what I was gonna say. I think I have it up here. We'll talk about it in the next segment. But there, I remember it was a very interesting. Like when I watched it, my libertarian principles weren't even as fully formed, and they're still shaping, obviously, in mm-hmm. some ways. But they weren't even as fully formed as they are now. And I saw this, and I was like, this is a perfect example of a market-based solution for handling pollution or water quality.
Right. So, which is one of the top things that always gets mentioned whenever you advocate for these principles. You know, people go right to, well, what are you going to do about pollution? What are you going to do about, you know, the commons and what have you? We'll talk about that. And I also want to pick your brain about Paul Ryan leaving and how this is going to be the catalyst for real change finally in our political system, because Paul Ryan's no longer going to be Speaker of the House. I might be a little sarcastic. 651-989-5855. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson. Neil Lynch in studio with us. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. I tend to check social media during the breaks, which is kind of a bad habit that I should knock off, because it has the tendency to distract me from whatever it was that we were talking about. But I have to share this because it's relevant to the topic we began the show off with tonight. I'm going to give you the quote, and then I'll tell you afterward who it is. I'm going to leave you hanging on that. Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it compromises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies. From these proceed debts and taxes, and armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments of bringing the many under the domination of the few. In war, too, the discretionary power of the executive is extended. Its influence in dealing out offices, honors, and emoluments is multiplied, and all the means of seducing the minds are added to those of subduing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in republicanism may be traced in the inequity or inequality of fortunes and the opportunities of fraud growing out of a state of war, and in the degeneracy of manners and of morals engendered by both. No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. Now, is this, you know, Rand Paul? Is this Justin Amash? Is this Barack Obama or some sort of crazy progressive? No. James Madison, in Political Observations, written on April the 20th, 1795.
Who's that?
What does he know?
Who's James Madison? He's old. He's outdated. What he has to say is not relevant for our time.
White privilege.
Don't you know anything? Right.
Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, 651-989-5855, the number to join us. Neil Lynch in studio with us tonight. We were talking about the market as it relates to the problem of pollution. And Neil remembered a case that he had read about where an experiment in market forces had resulted in a stream flowing once more after it had become a dry bed. So you looked this up during the break. What are the details?
Yeah, so the video I'm referring to is a TED Talk, and it's on TED.com, and the speaker was Rob Harman. And the title was How to Keep Rivers and Streams Flowing. And the synopsis says this: with streams and rivers drying up because of overusage, Rob Harman talks about a clever market mechanism to bring back the water. farmers and beer companies find their fates intertwined in the century-old tale of Prickly Pear Peak, or Creek, excuse me. And this video was from, trying to see the date here, I think it was, I'm not sure exactly, it was several years ago. I think it was 2014 or something like that. But this, that to me, oh, it's 2010, so it was 8 years ago.
Okay.
So this, again, this is a fantastic example of an example where market mechanisms are used to fight something like, this isn't pollution in this case, this is more natural resources.
Right.
So, but I think timely and relevant, and these are the kind of examples that conveniently get left out when people start crying for the government to do things.
One of the things we're constantly hearing, and it goes hand in hand with the notion of pollution, it goes hand in hand with the notion of environmentalism and the green movement, because alongside prognostications about how, you know, the world's going to end due to global warming or whatever the case may be, we've also heard warnings historically about overpopulation and dwindling resources and how we're going to run out of food or we're going to run out of oil, peak oil, you know, it's all going downhill from here and what have you. And what all of that ignores is the fact that people, human beings, the only reason any of these things are happening is because individual human beings are pursuing their own value in an effort to perpetuate and improve their quality of life. And that because human beings do so in a context where they're capable of perceiving changes and adapting accordingly, because we actually have our hand on the steering wheel and can make adjustments as the road turns, we have the ability to adapt and to change how we pursue our values. And that's why we haven't run out of food.
Yeah, the example you gave of the different, you know, peak oil and peak population, all that reminds me very much of the Jehovah's Witnesses when the 144,000 were supposed to be raptured away, and the first date didn't happen, and the second date, and the third date, and the fourth date. So it just kind of reminds you of the same thing. It's like, well, we're going to get it right eventually. A broken clock is right twice a day, people.
Along those lines, I'm sure we'll have something interesting from Zach in Llano Lakes. Welcome to the program.
Yes. So first of all, did I mention how the Bible applies to pollution in a different call? I can't remember exactly.
I'm sure you have at some point in weeks past.
So again, this is an issue of property rights ultimately. You know, the command to not steal presupposes property rights. But then Exodus 22 applies this command to if you let your field be grazed in by if you let somebody else's field get grazed in by your animal, you still owe that person restitution, and if you let your fire spread to your neighbor's property, then you owe them restitution.
Right.
So what do both of those things do? They destroy the value of your neighbor's property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does pollution do? Pollution does the exact same thing. Is that loving your neighbor, and is that a just way to treat somebody?
Right.
And so that's, if we viewed this as an issue of property rights, then I think pollution would be lessened. And in fact, I'd recommend one of the episodes of Axe to the Root by Bojidar Mironov, where he talks about pollution and how that's just a part of, you know, that's just some aspect, some external cost of production that we haven't figured out yet how to put to good use.
Right.
And it turns, if you guys listen to that, when we think of it in terms of dominion, that turns the environmental argument on its head, and as does the notion that pollution is an issue of property rights. Like, I consider, what if we apportioned the oceans as private property? I think we would see a lot less dumping in the ocean if we didn't consider it a common dumping ground.
Right.
I think the ocean should be apportioned as private property. Then we could protect endangered species and make better use of the natural resources and stuff.
Appreciate your call as always, Zach.
Well, and I think, see, there's a couple things there. The first one is, it makes perfect sense, but it takes time to convince people that these things are in their best interest. So it's a lot easier just to pass a law or have somebody with a gun come in and enforce your viewpoint of how things should be onto others.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, that this is totally off topic, not about pollution, but he talked about the biblical law, the Judaic law, which was a restitution-based law enforcement system, right? So if your animal got out and grazed on someone else's land, you're responsible to repay them. Mm-hmm. If your animal hurt another animal, they were supposed to repay the animal. It wasn't it wasn't a punitive.
It wasn't you're going to spend 30 years in jail.
Yeah, it wasn't a punitive system. It was a restitution based system, and I think that I wish we would take some lessons from that because. Yes. Yeah, that's I thought of that when he was talking about that. But yeah, as far as the whole notion of, I mean, and that's been a very common libertarian discussion point is the notion of property rights as it relates to pollution. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, again, it's one of those things where it's a legitimate argument. It's there are examples of it working. We could have that discussion. And again, you wouldn't be coercing or forcing people to do something in a certain way. But unfortunately, we're in a state now where, I mean, to think if you think about it, the only way that we're going to enforce, we're going to and prevent climate change, mm-hmm. And again, I'm just there's a lot of suppositions there. But if that's your goal, the only choice you have is to create a one world government where everything is equally enforced across the board.
Yeah, it's a problem that is designed to. What they're trying to get to is their prescribed solution. And so they've fostered a problem or the perception of a problem that gets us to that solution, which is total government control.
Right. You know? And that's the thing is that the problem that when you have this discussion, and Zach actually, I think, alluded to it quite well, is that it completely eliminates a whole category of potential solutions to these things. I think that most people, are in agreement that environmental stewardship in one way or another is really important, right? Using up, and the example he gave of dumping in the ocean, right? And I've always said this to people, a lot of times these egregious violations of environmental laws or examples where leaks have been allowed to happen or things have been buried that shouldn't be, it really comes back down to government allowing that kind of behavior to happen.
Right. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson. Neil Lynch in studio with us tonight. We'll talk with Eric and Chris both on the line when we return. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. I suddenly have this vivid visual replay in my mind of that scene from Anchorman where they're walking in the park and they're just tossing their garbage over their shoulders, you know, completely oblivious to any impact that it may have on their fellow men.
I thought you were going to talk about this Anchorman 2 where they had the anchor fight in the park, but that was a different, different part.
Right. Closing argument. My name is Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, 651-989-5855. The number to join us, Neil Lynch in studio with us this evening. Let's go to Eric in Uptown Minneapolis. Thanks for holding.
Hey, Walter, Neil. Just listening to the show tonight, the pirate story, you and your son.
Yeah.
I had two major experiences. One in my life when I found God, and two when I heard your pirate story. The pirate story, I've been looking for a way to explain frustration, not only in libertarian, Republican, parent, child, Christianity, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that pirate story is perfect. When you said, no, you're being chased by people and your kid wants to stop and investigate an island.
Right, yeah, right.
And
yeah.
That is, in my opinion, just the way it all is. Total. I mean, as, you know, Christians, like when, you know, people are talking about Christians on the show or whatever, people have this misconception that Christians are supposed to be nice.
Yes.
And there's this whole book called The Bible, and I don't see us being nice anywhere. In fact, we have one goal in mind, and I think a lot of world religions are like that. And then I'll just top that off with Dolly Madison never agreed with James. She was a meat eater. And I appreciate what you guys are doing, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks for holding once again.
You've changed a life today.
Yeah, with my story about Sea of Thieves.
That was he put that on the same level as Finding God.
Yeah.
Just so you know. I feel privileged to be in the same room with you.
Well, Walter. And if anybody missed it, the short version of the story is I was playing this video game with my kid. And it's this pirate game where you run around and you sail and you manage different stations at a ship and you try to hunt for treasure and what have you. And other players on other crews or other vessels can try to attack you and take your stuff. It's a pirate game. And we were in this situation, me and my 9-year-old, and we're getting chased, and I'm yelling at them to, you know, steer us this way or to man the cannons or whatever. And all of a sudden, I hear the anchor drop. I'm like, what is happening right now? He's like, we need to go over that island and look at this thing that's, it's pretty. And I'm like, are you out of your mind? And what it is it's one of the lies of our culture is that there's this common value that we're all chasing after. And we need, it's kind of the, it takes a village sentiment that if we're all in this together and we all need to move in one uniform direction, that's never going to happen because different people have different values and different priorities and different goals. And so when you come to that kind of an impasse where you're trying to go one way and the person you're working with is trying to go literally in a different direction, the answer to that is free association. The answer to that is, see ya, have fun on the island. I'm going to try not to sink. You know what I'm saying? And that it applies in that specific situation, and it applies in political parties and political movements and in life generally. And the only condition in which we're able to peacefully negotiate those types of conflicts is the condition of liberty. Let's talk to Chris in Minneapolis. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I'm kind of off subject here, but I was talking about your guest that called in, Zach.
Yeah.
You might have some agnostics or atheists listening to your show.
Sure.
So he might want to lay out the Bible passages all the time.
Well,
you know, he calls in two or three times a night, but it's kind of annoying. And I'm not any religion or anything like that, but it's kind of like, I don't know, did I call it, or am I listening to a religious show? You know, I like your information. I like your show, but he can lay off a little on the Bible passages and all that.
I appreciate your thoughts, Chris. Opinion. I will take it under advisement for about 5 seconds and then completely ignore it. And this is why. Let me tell you why. You ask if this is a religious show. In terms of format, no. I mean, I don't come on here every night with a list of Bible topics that I'm going to go through and analyze from a theological perspective. But here's the thing about religion, and this is something that I think is completely alien in our modern culture, but we need to reevaluate if we have any hope of getting out of the schizophrenia that seems to dominate our political and cultural discourse and our thinking and our choices that we make in our personal lives. Religion is not a thing that you do. You know, it's not a thing that you participate in once a week or a couple times a year when special days roll around on the calendar. My faith, my religious identity, my status as a Christian is definitional to who I am. It's how I perceive the world. And so the idea that I ought to separate my political analysis from my theology is like it's literally asking me to split my mind and heart into two. It's not something that I'm capable of. And this expectation is something that's unique of this particular moment in history. At no other point in human history has there ever been this expectation that you somehow are affiliated with a religion but don't actually apply its ideas or concepts to your analysis of your day-to-day life or the ways that we interact with one another in a society.
And if I may be so bold as to speak on behalf of your program, there's free association.
Right.
If he doesn't like when Zach calls or anybody who calls and talks about that kind of stuff, then turn off the show or do something else for a couple of seconds.
Right.
That's free association. Believe me, when I used to be, and this is a huge caveat, used to be a huge listener of Rush Limbaugh way back in the Stone Age before I was enlightened. Plenty of times are people who called who just got on my nerves. I don't think I ever listened to a show completely all the way through. There's a couple times like, you know, I'm not listening to this clown talk for a few minutes. I used to actually like when it was just the person talking and not taking calls at one point. I've changed my mind since then. But yeah, free association. I mean, believe me, there's going to be somebody that calls in, maybe wants to talk about, you know, Wiccan things or whatever. It doesn't matter to me. You are the lord of your mouth. I'm the master of my ears.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other side of it, though, you know, because yes, your nuclear option is the freedom of association to walk away, right? But I would suggest that before you make that decision, actually evaluate the value of what Zach is proposing. right? Like, tell me how he's wrong. Tell me how he's wrong. I'm more than happy to let anyone else who has an alternative opinion call in once or twice a night and say Zach's wrong because of A, B, and C reasons that I can cite or propose or whatever the case may be. And I'm not hearing that from people.
Well, if somebody wants to call up and quote the Quran with,
right.
with some wisdom.
And we've had that. We've
with,
had that.
With wisdom like that or some kind of saying,
right.
if it's relevant to the conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, and okay, let's not get into the whole theological thing about Proverbs not, actually not being like, there's a school of thought that Proverbs is actually just wisdom and good advice. It's not actually the force of God, you know, anyway, but that's a long story. Yeah, but I understand what you're saying. And I think that's, there's both cases, right? There is this drive to cause people to split and separate who they are from what they talk about. But at
right.
the same time, too, ultimately, at the end of the day, you get to listen. If you don't listen to it, don't listen to it. If you like to, or if you want to just tolerate it, go ahead. But again, I believe me, I've heard a lot worse on these shows by people. I don't consider what Zach was talking about as being a kind of zealot. He was just trying to use examples, which I think are relevant.
Well, and ultimately, when it comes to your faith, and you know, I don't want to speak generically about faiths because I'm not an expert on faiths. I'm an expert on my own faith. And my Christian faith, I regard to be the solution to literally every problem. And so if I'm going to talk about the problems in the world without touching back upon what I regard to be the solution to them, then it's all vanity. There's no purpose in it. If I don't eventually get around to saying, and this is how we solve it, and point to the thing that actually can, then what's the point? We're just tickling our ears here. Which, you know, can be entertaining, and there's all sorts of sources you can turn to for such entertainment, but I'm a little bit more interested in getting to the root of things. Let's talk to Dave in Santiago. Welcome to the program.
Wow, this topic really took a left turn real quick.
It did. You don't want to talk about God right now?
Hey, for me, spirituality is from the inside trying to get out, religion's from the outside trying to get in.
Sure.
But, you know, you want to talk about pollution and, you know, the market forces.
Right.
Years ago, when I was living out in Reno, Al Gore was out there, you know, keep Tahoe blue, you know, and, you know, the evil jet skiers and their two-cycle motors in their jet skis were the ones polluting Lake Tahoe. And we got a ban, you know, and the first thing they said was that we're going to ban all two-stroke motors from Lake Tahoe. To, you know, keep these jet skis off from polluting. Well, then they found out that, you know, a lot of boats are on that lake that have two-stroke motors, and a lot of these sailboats that everyone loves so much have two-stroke motors. What did the industry do? Industry was saying, hey, before you ban us, just think about this. We have four-stroke motors coming out for our jet skis. Didn't matter at all. What they wanted, they just wanted to ban jet skis off Lake Tahoe, period.
Hmm.
And another example was you go out west to Yellowstone. Yellowstone, oh, well, the pollution from these snowmobiles is so terrible. We have to limit how many snowmobiles can come out there. So they picked an arbitrary number and said, this is how many snowmobiles can come out there. Industry was saying at the same time, hey, we're changing all our snowmobiles over to four-stroke motors. Less pollution, better for the, you know. Oh, no, didn't matter. Well, all of a sudden, they had all these restrictions in place and caps on how many snowmobiles could go in, and you couldn't, you know, plan ahead, say, you know, hey, there's going to be, you know, 10 of us in our party coming into Yellowstone. Doesn't matter. It's first come, first serve. Get in. And a lot of people are saying, well, we're not going to take a chance to go to Yellowstone if, you know, we may not all get in.
Right.
So
right, right.
A lot of guys stopped going to Yellowstone.
Right.
Then next thing you know, all the people, all the private industry around Yellowstone was hurting because snowmobilers weren't
right.
going out there.
Right, right.
They lost all their winter business.
Yeah.
So now they're saying, well, you know, we got to come up with a way for people to assure that they get in to Yellowstone.
Huh. Appreciate the examples, Dave. Appreciate you holding to provide them to us. It goes back to what you said earlier, Neil, that, you know, whenever government acts, it's generally destructive to value.
Well, yeah, and the thing I thought about when he was discussing this, and he talked about the bans on the different, this is a you know, I always think about this a lot is when we start talking about innovation and technology innovation in these areas, and you know, I'm going to be honest here right now. I had this thought in my brain, and it was beautiful and perfect, and I completely forgot it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm 48 years old, and I'm losing my mind. Well, it was a brilliant point, though.
We'll give you some time to recover it or to just move past it and talk
about some
pop culture stuff. 651-989-5855, closing argument, TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com. It's kind of hard to tell looking out the window right now. I think snow is happening. It doesn't seem like it's the Snowmageddon that it was portrayed to be, but maybe that's yet to come overnight.
That's supposed to be overnight is what I heard.
All right, well, we shall see. Closing argument. My name's Walter Hudson, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Neil Lynch in studio with us this evening. Usually by this point in a program where we have you in studio as a guest, we're about 20 minutes into talking about pop culture, what's in the movie theater, what's on TV, what's coming up in the next season and what have you. We haven't touched upon that as of yet, and we got about, 6 minutes, so cram it all in.
We got to cram it in, that's right.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'll tell you what, The two things I'm looking forward to, and I'm actually surprised to say I'm looking forward to one more than the other. Obviously, all of you Marvel fans know that Avengers Infinity War. Listen to me. That's it. Affinity War. I like you better than somebody else. Yeah, no, right. You're amazing. No, you are. Yeah. Yeah, there's no affinity. We should do a riff on that. The Infinity War, where, spoiler alert, a lot of the Marvel characters are going to die. Because that's what happened in the comic books. Anyway, that comes out on the 27th of April, so it's a couple of weekends to go, and that's pretty exciting. The other show that I'm actually even potentially more interested in is this coming Sunday is the premiere, finally, after over a year, the season 2 premiere of Westworld, where we're going to actually see Shogun World, which was alluded to at the very end of the last episode of the first season. Mm-hmm. And based on the previews, it looks like the hosts, a.k.a. the robots, are running the show now, or they're in the process of it. There's a lot of dead humans laying around in their wake. So,
yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it's one of those shows where after the first season, I was left wondering where do they go from here? Cause it seemed, and it's hard to talk about without just spoiling the entire first season for anybody who hasn't watched it. But there were some certain premises and certain storytelling methods that were utilized in that season that they exhausted, right? And
yes,
you get to the end of the first season and it very much feels like a conclusion or the beginning of something that's part of a totally different story. And so I've been apprehensive during this year long gap in terms of, well, you know, do they have a plan that actually makes any sort of logical sense? And the previews thus far seem to indicate that the answer is yes, that there is actually an outgrowth that's logical and that's both different and consistent with what's come before.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing, all of this was loosely based on the 1970 something movie starring Yul Brynner.
Right.
And it's actually oddly been a lot of parallels to those things. I mean, at a very high level. So it's kind of like the reimagining of Battlestar Galactica, same type of thing. Right. But this is going so far beyond the original source material now. They're just making up new stuff. But it's fun to think about it because a lot of these movies that we've seen lately, like Ex Machina and Westworld, they stop at the point where the hosts, the robots are sentient. They understand who they are, and they go out in the world. Now we get to actually see what they do to a certain degree. So that's the part that's exciting. Plus, I want to see Shogun World.
Sure. Yeah, no, that'll be interesting. So, and they've hinted at there being other worlds as well that have not been even hinted at. They've hinted at the existence of other worlds without indicating what those worlds are.
Well,
so,
if you know from the original movie, there were three worlds. There was Westworld, there was Roman World, and there was I forget some other world, Samurai World, I think it was. Uh-huh. Anyway, so yeah, that I'm looking forward to that. The other show that I'm still looking forward to, despite not wanting to, is the final season of House of Cards, which is going to premiere in the fall, apparently. I just, you know, I need closure, right? I understand what happened, and, you know, Kevin Spacey got run off the show, And, you know, he was kind of, I really wish I could see the conclusion of that storyline of what happened between him and his wife, you know, after she's basically now the president of the United States and not returning his calls, right? Yeah. Like, I want to see how that plays out. But obviously, they're going to have to write him out of the show.
Yeah,
and so what? Which do you
to
do?
Me, I mean, that's like writing Sam off of Cheers. You know what I'm saying? It's like the it's about him. It's about his character.
He died. Oh, move on. Next.
Yeah,
like, right. That's pretty much. Or like, yeah, it's yeah. So I don't know. I will watch it. I will tough it out. It may not. I may not like it. Frankly, I liked the most recent season of House of Cards. I really liked it. Some people just didn't. My least favorite was the second season, honestly.
I like this last season as well. And, you know, I'm not looking forward to this one just because I fundamentally disagree with the logic being applied to something bad happened in the real world. And so we're going to completely change our narrative structure for this show going forward. It's like, you know, if you want to recast, just recast him.
Right.
If you want to recast him, recast him, but don't change what the story is and how it works and what it's about just to be politically correct. And it also seems like with the Claire Underwood taking over sort of thing, that it's become sort of this Me Too moment of, oh, look, now it's a woman who's in the White House. Isn't that special? Which, if you did it, like her rise absent that agenda was fantastic. But now to make it about that kind of takes away from the accomplishment of the character.
We'll have to see what they do with it.
651-989-5855 when we return on Monday. Closing argument, 9 to 11 weeknights. Appreciate you joining us. Twin Cities News Talk.
Peace.